I got to talk. I got to tell what I feel. I got to talk about my life as I see it.
Biggie.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell.
I'm not worried about work. I'm worried about robots.
On 920 The Game.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah, let's go Las Vegas here on this Tuesday, day five of NBA Summer League. This is the Mac Attack. We are here on the concourse at the Thomas and Mac. If you want to come say hi, if you're actually here listening, we're between 1:15 and 1:14, holding it down here over the next hour. We got a lot of exciting things to get to. Listen, we talked about this yesterday. I get it. John Morant's out. Zion Williamson is out. There are some stars out of Summer League, right? But that doesn't mean all of the stars are out of Summer League, okay? Last night, we got a full display of some of the great talent that is still here at NBA Summer League. The likes of Rui Hachimura putting it down for the Wizards. Taco Fall went for 12-2 last night in just 11 minutes. But the real story of that game was the coach was hearing it when they pulled poor Taco out of the game. People wanted to see more Taco. And then my guy, the Chicago Bulls, Coby White, going all in last night for 25-4-3. Bulls getting absolute blown out. But obviously the idea of Summer League is to get eyes on the future of the sport. So all is not lost here at Summer League. Still plenty of things to be taken in, plenty of great players, plenty of great moments. We saw that dunk last night, I believe, from Jackson Hayes, the kid from Texas, absolutely leveling a player on my Chicago Bulls. Poor guy. But yes, a lot of good things still going down here at Summer League. And I saw my pal. He was just walking by on the concourse. The one and only Trevor Lane from SB Nation, Lakers Nation, stopping by here for a quick couple minutes before you go out of town. How you doing, Trevor?
Doing pretty good. Like you said, there's stars being born here in Summer League, even if some of them aren't playing.
And I talked about that dunk. How about that dunk last night?
Oh, my God. That was one of the most athletic plays I've ever seen. I mean, ever. Not just in Summer League. Ever. That was incredible.
He was looking down on the rim.
I mean, it hurts a little bit because the Pelicans got him using that fourth pick. Right. They traded it from the Lakers. But, my gosh, Jackson Hayes. That guy's a player.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly, yeah, and we talk about stars still being here. That is one. Now, RJ Barrett is another one. Summer League not going the way I think a lot of Knicks fans had hoped. What do you, when you look at the RJ Barrett, I'm not going to say situation, it's not even a week, right? Like, yeah. The guy hasn't been in orange and blue for more than a hot minute, but we know how Knicks fans are. And listen, I mean, I think you can draw some conclusions at the fact this is his first, you know, look at in terms of being in the association, and it hasn't gone great. What's been your read on RJ Barrett so far?
You know, it hasn't been a great summer league, but right. That doesn't always mean that he's gonna flop in the NBA or anything. Summer league is a whole different animal, right? You've got guys who are playing for their basketball lives, who are playing at 150 miles an hour, and it's not always reflective of the NBA game. So, look, it's a concern. Usually you'd rather see a guy like RJ Barrett just coming out here and feasting on summer league players. But the fact that he's not, it's not like we can say, oh, he's clearly going to be a bust or anything like that. There's plenty of time for him to figure it out. And a lot of the top draft picks, they're not training that hard heading into the draft because right. The last thing you want is to get injured. So a lot of the guys come in here, they're not in top condition just yet. I mean, look, Zion looked a little heavy the other night.
Yeah, what did you think about that? Because there was a lot of talk. Now, I had never seen Zion before live and in the flesh, and I was up and I was looking at him. I mean, he looked wide. He looked thick, but that's kind of what I was led to believe with Zion. But afterwards, I guess on television, and people got a closer look at him, he did look thick. Is that a concern to you when a kid like that comes in, 18 years old, though he was on Friday, he turned 19 on Saturday? But, yeah, what's your concern level when you see something like that?
I'm not that concerned. I mean, look, once he gets in an NBA conditioning program, he's already, I mean, just he's jacked, right? I mean, this guy has so much muscle on him, it's ridiculous for a basketball player. He doesn't look like he should be able to get up the way that he does.
Yeah.
So once he gets in an NBA conditioning program, once the Pelicans really get a hold of him, he's going to be just fine. I'm not worried about a few extra pounds on him in July. When the season's not starting for him until October. He's got plenty of time.
As we're kind of talking about like what's left to be seen here at Summer League, there is plenty to be seen. I've been talking about it all week, but you can still get tickets. Friday and Saturday were sold out, but the festival is still going on. And I do call it a festival because it is a bit of a celebration of basketball as everyone's kind of coming out here and taking in the festivities. You can still get tickets. All you got to do is go out to, you got a couple different options. You go to unlvtickets.com, you can go to nbatickets.com, or you can reach out via phone and dial 702 2739 fans. Those are all ways that you can get tickets out here to the Thomas and Mack for Summer League. Tickets starting at just $35, $25 for kids. So it is a good option to come out here with the family. And also, we kind of talked about this a little bit, but the Chinese and Croatian national teams are here. Now, I flip the script and I start talking about China. I believe they're in action. No, Croatia's in action right now. I believe China was in action last night. Point being is there is a lot of media here from Asia for the China national team, and then there's also media here for Rui Hachimura, who last night had a decent game. I mentioned 19-7. Didn't obviously Wizards didn't end up winning, but again, this isn't about wins and losses. This is about getting eyes on the future of the league. So when you look at a guy like Hachimura, what do you think? I mean, he was taken in the lottery. This is a guy that a lot of people are high on. Are you high on Rui?
Yeah, you know, after seeing him, I thought a lot of the misses that he had were things that he can fix. Like, he was missing a few mid-range jumpers, and I think those are shots that are going to start going down for him. I was more impressed with his physical presence on the floor. He looks like he's a different level athlete than a lot of the guys that are out there, and that's what you want to see from an NBA talent.
And it looks like he knows that he belongs.
Yes.
Like, he plays with confidence. He plays within himself. A very, dare I say, veteran-like approach to a kid who has no real reason to feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, he plays very, very under control, which is, you know, not typical for Summer League. A lot of times you see guys that come out and you're thinking, I've got something to prove, and they try to do too much.
That was kind of my feeling with RJ Barrett.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Very, very much so. He's trying to prove that he's like the number three pick or even better.
Right.
And sometimes when you force things, it doesn't turn out well, and that's what Knicks fans are sweating about right now.
Right, for sure. Absolutely. And I brought up Coby White. He went off last night. We talked about this yesterday. This is something that we're both kind of looking forward to, is this, you know, to see what he's going to be able to do. I think the Bulls are a bit of a wild card. I know they've kind of fallen out of the discussion in terms of Russell Westbrook. I know, you know, the tension has kind of shifted to the Heat as far as that goes, but you know, Coby White, he can score, he can seemingly do it all. We didn't get to see a lot of him at North Carolina, so it's exciting in that regard. What's your read on him, and what do you expect from him for the rest of the summer?
I mean, he was putting guys on skates out there. He was finding his shots, passing the ball well, making good reads. I mean, those are all the types of things that you want to see out of point guard. It wasn't perfect, but it's summer league. This is time for him to experiment and grow, and I've been mostly impressed with his ability to find his own shot in a summer league offense, so I think he's looked great so far.
All right, so I mentioned it. Russell Westbrook. The conversation surrounding the Oklahoma City Thunder right now. Listen, their whole organization was thrown into a tizzy, essentially. I mean, we talked about this with numerous people. It's not so much that the Russell Westbrook deal, or excuse me, it's not so much that the Kawhi Leonard deal was a surprise that he landed in Los Angeles and he was a part of the Clippers. It was the Paul George caveat to that whole deal that really, I mean, now it's affecting multiple teams in multiple ways. This whole free agency period is wild. Listen, Miami gets brought up. On the surface, I like the idea because you can only team Russ with another star on so many teams. One of those teams happens to be Miami, but, and I'm a Jimmy Butler guy. I truly am. But where there's smoke, there's fire. And no matter how much I like Jimmy Butler or how much I want to believe he's a team-first guy and he's not a problem, there are instances where I look back and it's like, okay, maybe there's something there. My point is when you have presumably two high-octane personalities on a team, someone's going to have to take a back seat. And I don't know if Butler's capable of taking a back seat again, as he did to Derrick Rose in Chicago, which is kind of what caused a little bit of that, you know, rift potentially in Chicago with management. Point being, I know Russ isn't that guy. Russ isn't taking a back seat to anybody. So when you hear that, when you hear Miami, what's your first knee-jerk reaction?
I mean, I like it in the vein that it's another superstar duo, and we're seeing a lot of those around the league, and so that would be nice to have another duo out there, especially in the Eastern Conference. But you're right, there's one basketball, you've got two guys who both see themselves as alphas, and there's going to be some friction there. Now, there's not a whole lot of other options to try to steal the ball away there, so pretty much they're going to be taking all the shots if they do combine in Miami, but yeah, that's a good point, that at some point one of them kind of has to take the back seat and say, like, look, if there's a close game and somebody needs to take a last-minute shot, who's taking that? And both of those guys feel like it should be them.
Right, and that's the issue. When you feel like it's your team, you know, that can create certain issues. And obviously we're not behind closed doors, but you look at Chris Paul and James Harden, we thought everything was sort of okay, and it turns out maybe it wasn't. You know what I mean? And there is a concern level there, but at the same time, you go out, you make the deal with Butler, you're paying the money that you're paying him. Presumably, you're going to need another piece around him. So I don't know how many guys out there, you know, star players are willing to take a backseat to anybody. I think at that point, you just have to figure out a way to make it work. If Miami can make this work, Trevor, and we're here with Trevor Lane from Lakers Nation, what are their possibilities in the East? Because the East is wide open. And listen, Jimmy Butler and Russell Westbrook, that's a nice tandem.
Yeah, look, I mean, Eric Spoelstra has plenty of experience managing egos, right? I mean, he had the big three, so he figured out a way to make that work. So if they can come up with a way to make it work, then you've got a really, really high-powered duo there that they could take on anybody in the Eastern Conference. I still like the Sixers. I still like them better. I still like the Bucks. They've got that continuity. But I would certainly give the Heat a puncher's chance against either of them.
All right. Trevor Lane from Lakers Nation. Trevor, appreciate you stopping by to chat a little Summer League. I know you're out of here tonight.
Yep.
What are you going to be watching for the rest of Summer League as we get to – well, we're day five, but we still got essentially a whole nother week to go until next Monday's championship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to be looking for anybody who really stands out, anybody who can show their stuff. I mean, it's not an easy environment to play in, and sometimes in limited minutes. So you look for that guy that can do something that just makes you say, wow, like what Jackson Hayes did the other day. Anything that can really pop like that, that's what teams are going to be looking for out here.
All right, who do you think is going to take home the championship this year?
You know, the Knicks were favored at the beginning, but after seeing what I saw from the Boston Celtics yesterday, man, that team, Carson Edwards was lighting it up. And, of course, then you've got all the support behind Taco Fall, and they've got some tremendous players around him. So I'm going to go against my Lakers Nation roots here and say it's going to be the Boston Celtics taking it.
There you go. Many thanks to Trevor Lane over there. It's a shame that Trevor won't be here. He's leaving tonight because next Saturday I got a big announcement for you. We haven't talked about this yet on the show. You head over to GameWorks down there at Town Square right off there off the boulevard. Me, myself, and all of the friends of LV Sports Network, Lotus Broadcast. So Cofield and Adam, all of our friends over there on ESPN, Tyler Bischoff, some of our friends from Fox Sports, got 920 The Game. We are all going to be down at GameWorks on Saturday starting at 6 o'clock from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. We're going to have various on-air hosts, analysts, and we're going to even have some NBA players. And we're going to be having our NBA Summer League Esports Challenge. We're going to be at GameWorks. It mentioned it's going to be starting at 6 o'clock. We're going to have food, prizes, tons of games. You want to play me in NHL 19? Bring it on. You want to play me in NBA 2K19? Bring it on. We'll be there. I am a regular Ultimate Team player and Diamond Dynasty player. You can get that smoke. I will be bringing it to you. That is this Saturday going down at GameWorks, the Summer League Party sponsored by, our friends, everyone, Lotus Broadcasting. All right? That's Angel pumps his fist. That's right. Angel will be out there. You can meet the silent man, Angel. I reference him every show. But he will actually be there in person. Maybe we can get you to DJ. You DJed the Christmas party. You killed that, Angel. All right, let's do it, Nick. It's time for the opening round.
It's the opening round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
All right, so last night baseball was in the news. Yes, it's Summer League, but you know how when Summer League starts, you know, it usually ramps up the interest in terms of baseball at least a little bit. Now, a lot of people are talking about baseball for all the wrong reasons. I'm going to get to that in a second. But I want to celebrate the sport of baseball, which was yesterday, obviously, in about, in 2 hours, the All-Star Game is going to be kicking off. So that is actually going to be happening. But you know what comes along with the All-Star Game. It's the festivities 24 hours before. And that is, of course, the Home Run Derby. And if you like, you know, the celebrity games and all that stuff that was happening after the Home Run Derby. But the Home Run Derby last night, dare I say, was the greatest home run derby in the history of Major League Baseball. And listen, I go back. I don't know how far I go back. I remember Griffey in the backwards hat. Obviously, in more recent memory, you know, Josh Hamilton going, you know, nuts in 2008 and Aaron Judge and then that great battle of Todd Frazier and Jock Peterson a couple years ago. It has provided some great moments throughout my life as a fan of baseball. And I understand it's not this super competitive. You know, it doesn't count. It's not in the stand. None of this actually matters. It's for the fans. And last night, the players really, they delivered for the fans. And none more so than Junior, the new Junior, not Ken Griffey Jr., but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. went absolutely out of his mind. Okay? Now listen. At the end of the night, Vladimir Guerrero wasn't the champion of the Home Run Derby, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because, inexplicably, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had 91 home runs over the span of the Home Run Derby last night. Anyone want to take a guess what the previous record was? Angel, you want to throw up a number? Previous total. What was that? No. He broke the record at 91. No, I'll save you the guessing.
42.
42? No, Nick, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. The actual record was 61. That was 61. That was the record prior to what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did last night.
So basically the almost the record that Roger Maris had?
Yeah, exactly. 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 And then went out last night. Okay. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. beat that by the second round. By the time the final started, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. already had 69 home runs. He ended the night with 91, and he still ended up losing in the final to Peter Alonso. And I want to give a ton of credit to Peter Alonso. He had a great run through the Home Run Derby. But again, I want to preface this. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the runner-up, had 91 home runs, and the prior record was 61. He obliterated it by 30. For a single round, the record was 29. That was done by, I believe, Josh Hamilton in 2008. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. went out last night, and he had 29 in the first round, and he had 29 in the second round. He had back-to-back rounds of the biggest number that you could possibly put up or that we had ever seen. Now, I understand it's an exhibition. I understand that it's not this, you know, great moment that counts. It doesn't count towards the standings. I get that. But let's just talk about endurance. Let's just talk about skill. Let's just talk about the time it takes and the time it takes to put in to do what he did. And in the final round, after hitting 29 and 29 and then going into that triple overtime that he had with Jock Peterson in the second round, he still went out and hit like 22 or 23 in the final round, which for me was arguably more impressive than the 29. It was just, it was an absurd exhibition of strength, endurance, and really what a lot of people are so excited about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for, right? He fits perfectly into this 2019 mold of what baseball is and what baseball fans want. And what baseball fans want are home runs. Now, that brings me to my next point. At what cost? At what cost are these home runs coming? Because as much as I love what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did last night, and as much as I love home runs, and as much as I love offense, I love baseball. Now, Nick, we've talked about it on this show before. Baseball right now is on an absurd pace for home run hitting. Currently right now, I think they're at 3,600 plus, which is like 300 or 400 ahead of the pace in 2017, which was the record-breaking year for home runs in Major League Baseball. By the end of this year, the number's supposed to come in somewhere around 6,600. If it stays on pace, 6,600 home runs, which would obliterate the record of 6,100 plus in 2017. I want to state that again, 6,600 plus on schedule this year, which would obliterate the old record of 6,100 plus in 2017. So we're looking at on pace to blow that record out of the water by almost 400 to 500 home runs, which is absurd. It's not like hitters are better now. It's not like hitters are just looking for home runs more, although that is true. People are trying to hit home runs more. It's very much a more home run or strikeout league. But that doesn't take away with the way the ball is coming off the bat. Now, I've talked about it plenty on this show. I talked about it in 2017 as well. But this year is even more of a highlight because there's more eyes on the situation that's happening. Rob Manfred, commissioner of Major League Baseball, when he came into the commissionership in 2015, if that's even a word, he said that that offense was an integral part of what makes the game work. He said he had a concern or he had an idea that he wanted to push offense in this league. Now what happens? As we look at all these juice balls and players coming out, Justin Verlander came out just a couple days ago and called it a blanking joke when he was asked about it. I got the full quote here. It's a blanking joke, Verlander said to ESPN. Major League Baseball is turning this game into a joke. They own Rawlings, which is the baseball manufacturer, and you've got Manfred up here saying it might be the way to center the pill. They own the blanking company. If any $40 billion company bought a $400 million company and the product changed dramatically, it's not a guess as to what happened. We all know what happened. Manfred, the first time he came in, what did he say? He said he want more offense. All of a sudden he comes in, the balls are juiced. It's not a coincidence. We're not idiots. Well said by Justin Verlander, but I got to be honest, I am an idiot, Justin, because I didn't know that Major League Baseball owned Rawlings. I legitimately didn't know that. And actually, I want to bring in our next guest. He was going to come by to talk Summer League, but I know he's a baseball fan, so I want to get to him right now. Willie, you want to put on that headset? Because I want to talk to you about this. We got Willie Ramirez, Pops, from the AP, the Associated Press. Did you watch the Home Run Derby last night?
I was here, and I was sitting next to Adam Hill, and we were seeing the updates on Twitter.
Okay.
And then at some point in I can't remember where we were at that point, maybe in the back waiting for players to come out, but he had put it up on the live stream on his phone, the final, and then he ended up losing.
Right.
So.
Which is so anticlimactic. To hit 91 home runs, to blow the record away by 30 and still lose. I mean, I've been calling Vladdy Jr. the people's champ all day. It's true. I mean, when we look back at this 2019 home run derby, we're not going to think about Peter Alonso. We're going to think back to what Vladimir Guerrero did. But now back to the juicing of the balls. They're always juiced in the home run derby. We know that, right? But you hear Verlander's comments. You hear that Rawlings, did you know that Rawlings was owned by Major League Baseball?
No.
Neither did I.
No.
So that, to me, on some level is concerning, especially because Manfred spoke to the media today, okay? He spoke to the media today, and according to Jeff Passett of ESPN, here's what he had to say on some players' belief that Major League Baseball is intentionally juicing the baseball. Quote, baseball has done nothing, given no direction for an alteration of the baseball. I'm sorry, I have a hard time believing that. Number one, when you come in 2015 and you say you want offense, and then offense starts popping up at record numbers. I saw a pop fly. I think it was in Minnesota last night. I don't remember where it was. It was a pop fly, a reach, an outside the box shot, just a pop shot that went out to left field. It was a home run. Like, balls are flying off the bat, and it is because of the baseball. And they're telling us that they don't know why. I'm sorry. There's too much money involved in this game that you don't know. You acknowledge that the balls are coming off different. You acknowledge on some level the pitchers. Justin Verlander never had blister issues until 2017 and 2019. Like, there are things that are pointing to a very clear case of something's up, and I'm sorry, there's too much money that I'm going to believe that line of thinking that you just don't know, that no direction was given, you're in the dark.
And let me ask you this. Let's say that since this situation has sort of come up.
Right.
Do we now have to put an asterisk and start questioning Major League Baseball, the same that we have during the steroid era?
Right, and that's my issue, because you bring up the steroid era, Willie, and you're here with Willie Ramirez from the Associated Press. Listen, I already lived through an era of questioning stats. And in baseball, where stats are such an integral part of the game, right? Like, stats in baseball might be tied to one another more so than any other sport. I truly mean that. When you think of what 400 means, when you think of what 61 means, when you think of DiMaggio's hit streak, when you think about the Triple Crown, when you think about stuff like that, stats are they're kind of everything to a game that has been.
When you think of Pete Rose's stat, that doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. But it's a stat, but you still acknowledge it. Like, stats are everything. It's a 160-year-old game.
Yep.
It's one of the greatest games for that reason, because we have so much history to pull from and so many statistics to pull from. I was born during the steroid era. I was 9 years old when Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire were the Bash Brothers. I love those guys. But I also spent a lifetime defending baseball and saying, well, it kind of is what it is. You know, that's my era. I'm glad it's over. I arguably hate this era more. Because it's a company-wide, dare I say, conspiracy to fool your fans. And Willie, here's my thing. If more people were watching the game, okay. If more people were watching baseball, okay. If there was this idea that offense equates to metrics, equates to numbers, equates to ROI, then I'm okay with it. But I'm not seeing that. So you're pushing away people like me, hardcore baseball fans that have always stuck by you. You're upsetting us. And here's another thing. Rob Manfred, commissioner of Major League Baseball. We talk about it all the time. Why don't local sports radio hosts, or why don't national sports radio hosts, why don't talking heads talk about baseball? Well, I think there's obvious reasons for that. It doesn't have the interest of some of the other sports. Now, we tried to, but here I am sitting on back-to-back days, Willie, talking about juice baseballs.
Yeah.
Way to go, Major League Baseball.
Well, and here and what's funny is during the steroid era, you sort of elevated the view and brought everybody in before it came out, right? Remember the McGwire Sosa race that year, so on and so forth. Now, you're talking about, as you just pointed out, the diehard baseball fans that have stuck through all that being pushed away, but after things like last night, the casual baseball fan is attracted to it, saying, oh, did you see that?
Yeah.
So they're drawing new interest, but they're pushing. If they can get on the right page and talk truthfully and address this, then maybe everybody that's watching baseball can come together. Because like you said, if you're pushing the diehards away and you're bringing in new viewers, well, then you're just kind of evening out. You're not really increasing your audience.
And are you actually bringing in new viewers, or is it just the freak show aspect?
Well, I think it's
like,
the people.
Oh, you hear 29 or 61 or whatever, and you see the numbers. Oh, that was cool. Or Vladimir, he's got a nice swing. That's a powerful guy. But are you tuning into baseball again?
Well, what I'm saying is I think it's more so the when I say that, it's like you're attracting – people that wouldn't normally watch the Home Run Derby, the All-Star, or people that happen to be flipping through, oh, let's watch the Home Run Derby, and they may not have before, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, they've heard the hype of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Tatis Jr. this season, right? So now they tune in, they saw it. They're going to watch tonight where they may not have before, whereas the Dyers are like, oh, man, this is just, come on. This
we're going through this again.
Yeah, I'm going to turn on the Summer League.
There you go. And here's the thing. If Yelich hit 62, how do I know that's 62? It's not 62.
Right.
Because everything that I'm hearing and everything that I'm seeing numbers-wise and what the pitchers are saying, it's that the baseball's different. Now, here's the thing. They're saying the drag is different. I don't know what that means. Here's a quote also. I said Rob Manfred was out talking today to media. Here's one of the things that he said. He said, MLB is being transparent about the baseballs this year. He says they're still trying to figure out why the balls, made by Rawlings, owned by the league, are different this year. Is it really that big of a quest? Do you really need to hire Inspector Gadget to get to the bottom of it? Rawlings makes the balls. What are you doing differently? What leather are you using differently? How are you stitching them differently? Someone has an answer, and I promise you, Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, you're worth $40 billion. You can figure that answer out. The fact that he already knows the answer. Exactly.
He already knows the answer.
But the fact that he's sitting here and telling us that he doesn't, it's insulting to the fans.
Right, and Rawlings obviously has their hands tied. It's almost like coming down here and asking the NBA players, well, you got to go through the PR guy. You can't talk to this person. You can't talk to this person. You got to talk to this person. So now Rawlings is owned by Major League Baseball, so you can't question Rawlings.
No.
You can't question this. You got to go to baseball. Well, no, it's taboo.
Right.
So it's all of a sudden we're back to talking about juice, only now it's with baseball. And again, I question this. If that's the case, and let's just say in 2, 3, 4 years down the road it comes out like the steroid issue.
Right.
Now do we come back and say, well, those numbers are juice? So these guys didn't put up Hall of Fame numbers when realistically they probably did.
And how do we trust baseball? How do we trust baseball at that point? You know what I mean? Like, I already have a healthy or non-healthy distrust. I don't know, however you want to look at it, with the game itself. I already lived through the steroid era. Now, here I sit again. I'm dealing with it again. It's just, it's ridiculous. And I want one more thing from Rob Manfred. And this is what's driving me crazy, the lack of honesty and transparency. And when you start to lie to me, it becomes more clear of what your motivations are and how I can't trust you. Listen to this. Rob Manfred vehemently denies that Major League Baseball has intentionally doctored the baseball year and says, quote, there is no desire on part of ownership to increase the number of homers in the game. Now, I think there's a real key there. There is no desire on part of ownership to increase the number of homers in the game. Rob, when you came in 2015, you said you wanted more offense.
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence that you said you wanted more offense, and then in 17 and 19, we're breaking records. And now you're telling us that there's no desire on the part of ownership to increase offense? That's a blatant, bold-faced lie.
It's contradictory, and that's, you know, and he's like you said, he's definitely now getting the attention he wants. Unfortunately, from the analysts, it's in a desire way. Now you got me completely out of NBA mode. Thanks a lot, Ryan. But I will let's end this on a positive note.
Let's do.
Speaking about home runs, Bryson Stott from Las Vegas, his first at-bat today from the Phillies organization, he went yard.
That's right.
And Bryson did it properly. I don't know if Rawlings is down there in the rookie class A.
Yeah, I hope
not. My man Bryson is pushing balls out the park. He's been doing it since here in Vegas.
Hey, tell me about this kid, because I don't know a lot about him. Obviously, I know he's going to the Phillies. There's that aspect. There's the Bryce connection there. But obviously, he's thought highly of. What makes him so sought after? What makes him such a dangerous prospect?
He doesn't buy into his own hype.
That's a good start.
He's humble. When I did a story on him for the Associated Press, and I spoke to Greg Maddux, and he said the greatest thing about him is something that you can't coach or teach, and that's humility. He just goes out and does his job. He's a guy that can go play seven positions on the field. I don't know if he could catch, but you could put him anywhere. You could ask him to do anything. He can spray the field with his bat. He understands the game. He understands the philosophies behind baseball, not just go out, hit the ball, not just field the ball. He's a student of the game, and his loyalty and dedication to things on and off the field are what really helps him. What's driven him more than a lot of the on-the-field aspects, it was the death of a close friend when he was at Desert Oasis High School, who died of cancer. And on his deathbed, he told him, he said, I want you to always remember me, because I'm always going to be with you when you step on that major league field, when you get out there. And this was like – This was like 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah.
when they were going into the, I think it was his junior summer to be senior at Desert Oasis, and you know, just a really good family, really good upbringing, a lot of love in that house, you know, with his brother and sister. Sister is part of the national championship UNLV cheer squad. His father was a quarterback here at UNLV, Derek Stott. His mom went to school here. She's a cheer coach around town. She's well loved in the community. She's a teacher at El Dorado High School. So the Stott family, they just really embraced. And what I think's helped Bryson is being able to see his, like, his mom reach out. And for instance, you called me pops at the beginning. If there's an equivalent to that, she's moms across town. Everybody knows her. A lot of the national championship or national contending cheerleaders and squads,
sure,
in this town.
Sure, yeah.
And they've just always been involved in the community. You see Bryson out there, even older brother Brennan. They're just a really good family, and I think that's helped humble him and keep him grounded and not let his head get big. You know, you saw with Bryce Harper. And I don't blame him a lot for the attitude that people blame him for, because when you are 15, 16, and you're on the cover of Sports Illustrated sitting in the desert across from Las Vegas High School because you hit a home run 500
sure.
feet, your head can get kind of big. Remember, there was a basketball player that did the same thing with the crown on his head at 15, 16 on the cover of national magazines called King James. So a lot of times it's the national media that put those guys in that position, and all of a sudden they're thrust in the spotlight. Bryson never really had that, so he was able to stay grounded, and I think that's what benefits him most.
All right, great stuff from Willie Ramirez. We're going to stay with Willie as we continue the conversation. When we come back, Willie has been here all summer league long, writing the stories and telling the stories and getting the insight on maybe some players that you haven't heard of. We talked about the Jaws. We talked about the RJs. We talked about the Zions and everyone else. We're going to continue that conversation with some obscure names and some better stories surrounding summer league with Willie Ramirez here on the Mac Attack when we come back.
The Mac Attack returns. You're listening to the Mac Attack.
It's too bad that we don't have a PA out here. We'd have the whole concourse grooving.
Oh yeah, I'm digging it.
That is like the summer anthem, is it not? Like you turn that on and you get everyone going.
That's been my anthem since.
You don't want to date yourself, right, pops?
Oh, I don't care about that. I'm just not gonna bring up personal situations. That's been my anthem for a long time.
I feel like I knew where you were going with that, buddy. We're here with Willie Ramirez from the Associated Press. It is day 5 of Summer League. We are down here at the Thomas in Mac. Plenty of good matchups coming your way tonight. I believe Hachimura is actually gonna be in action tonight, isn't he, Willie? I think it's him versus the Clippers, something like that. I think that's right. Going down here later tonight. Now, I know that you've been here. We've talked about the Hachimuras. We've talked about RJ Barrett. We talked about Kobe White. We talked about Zion being one and done. But you're actually out here telling some stories about some of the players we haven't heard of. And we were kind of talking off air, you know, before this show started. And you're actually working on a really interesting story that's going to be seeing the light of day here. I don't know when.
It'll be online tonight.
Tonight,
and
all right.
It'll be in Spokane's newspaper, the Spokesman Review. Every year when I come out here, I shoot out a slew of emails after the NBA draft in my My MO is to reach out to non-NBA cities about players, their hometowns. Basically, I look through the draft. I eliminate players that come from NBA cities. I eliminate the foreign exchange guys. And then I eliminate guys that left their hometown to go play in big cities.
Mercenaries.
Big like Oak Hill and Finley.
Right.
All you're left with are the small town. You know, Dobbs Ferry, New York, Brentwood, Tennessee.
Sure.
And I reach out to those and I say, hey, you know, your hometown guy. They don't have a big budget, but when you put together 10 to 15 stories, you know, over the course of 11 days, it can add up. For me, it's worth it because I'm going to be out here anyway.
Sure.
But I get to tell some stories that you would not really hear about otherwise. So I've written some decent stories already. Wrote up Daniel Gafford for his home story opening night for who's playing for the Chicago Bulls.
Now he had a great opening night. Now what's his story? What did you write about him?
Well, just it's more or less just that was a reaction piece.
It wasn't the great night that he had on night one.
Yeah. It was for his hometown paper.
Sure.
They reached out to me. Hey, can you do something?
Very cool.
Spokane always reaches out. I do stuff with them throughout the year. When anything involving Gonzaga, Eastern Washington, Washington State, or the University of Idaho, that proximity in there, whatever will take place. If there's something for the West Coast Conference Tournament. Last year I did something during the WNBA season on Courtney Vandersloot. She plays for the Chicago Sky. She went to Gonzaga. Gonzaga-related things that will come up, especially in the Summer League. So this year, aside from the Brandon Clarks and the Josh Perkins and the Rui Hachimaras, there's a young man named Perrion Calandrette, and he went to the University of Idaho. Junior and senior year, he had season-ending injuries. The last one kept him off the basketball court for 1 year. His athleticism, though, is tremendous and superior in that he refused to fail, he refused to give up, he refused to fold up his career.
Yeah.
And his best friend from sixth grade happens to be Zach LaVine.
Nice guy to know if you're trying to make the NBA.
Yeah, so it goes deeper, which I won't get into because it's part of my story. So I'd much rather you follow me on Twitter, and I'm going to put the link up.
There you go. Where can people follow you on Twitter?
At Willie G. Ramirez, W-I-L-L-I-E-G Ramirez. Anyway, their bond grew stronger because of circumstances during Levine's sophomore year. And fast forward to this year, LaVine, all he did was pick up a phone call. And he said, look, I just want you to give him a workout. You don't have to give him a spot on the roster. I'm not asking for that. Just let me show him the door. And you guys can make your own assessment. And he showed him, and they brought him out for a workout, and he's on the Summer League roster. But everything in between is a really great story. And those are the kinds of stories that I enjoy writing more than having to build up. Like the Rui Hachimura for the Spokesman Review up in Spokane, that's a Sunday cover, which is great. It's nice. Yeah, I'll have the byline on there. I've been doing this 32 years. I've had plenty of cover stories.
Sure.
But it's these stories right here. This kid, the one night that I first talked to him, he said, you know, he was going to get me in touch with Zach, who hadn't made it to town yet. He was like, let me give you my number. So he's been texting me the last 48 hours, thanking me constantly when I've texted. Every time I've texted for clarification on something or asked a question, he follows it with, thanks so much, I can't wait to read this, blah, blah, blah. The PR agent for the Bulls, thank you. He can't wait for this story. Because
right.
These are the stories that you would never hear. And if this kid never makes it to the NBA, if he goes and plays in the G League and then ends up overseas for a few years, whatever the case is, it doesn't take away from the story that got him here. And those are some great stories, and that's why I like to do them for those hometown papers. Just like, you know, when you're here, when you're sitting here and you got Adam and Adam Hill and Sam Gordon and whoever's out here for the Review Journal,
sure,
they're telling stories. You know, Sam had a story on a kid who graduated here locally, I believe, from Canyon Springs the other day, and it brings those readers in. So to reach out to those smaller places, like Brentwood, Tennessee, I'm doing a story on Garrison, his name escapes me, Matthews. Adams, I think it's on Adams' all-time college.
I was going to say, got your statistician analyst here, Adam
Adams'
Hill.
College fantasy team, because he played with Lipscomb. You know, they want those stories. They reach out. They thank the sports editors. Thank you for the email. Like, man, yeah, we would love it, because, you know, I'm not looking to gouge them financially. It's just like, right, yeah, that fits in our budget. That'd be great, because their readers want it.
And stories,
those are the hometown
heroes. And stories last.
Yeah.
I mean, you just hear a good story, and you may not even remember the player's name, but the story lasts for 10, 20 years.
Yeah, just to have that link. These guys, it makes, you know.
Of course.
I don't know if you've seen yet, but. They've had, I don't know the exact number, but the first day I had heard, and people could just be exaggerating or embellishing, but I had heard between anchors and cameramen and grips and editing people that there were over 100 media requests from Japanese media, mm-hmm, just for Rui Hachimura alone. And then there's a few other Japanese basketball players that are here as well, but he's the draw. So it's been absolutely wild back under the tunnel, you know, and you go back there. I went back there to try to get ready for the scrum after his first performance, and it was 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and I could not fit because they were already set up with their cameras and everything. One lady said, "We're going live." So they did. He did Japanese media first for about 8 minutes, all in Japanese, and then they whisked him away, and I was like, whoa, what about American media? Then they gave him to us for about 2 minutes. So when you go and ask for Garrison Matthews,
yeah,
you know, it's just a great feel, because everybody else is looking for these stories. And the PR people, they love it, because they're like, yeah, that's it. He's an easy grab. I can get him, no problem.
Sure,
for
you. Yeah.
So they bring him down.
Not Zion.
So, yeah, I have a number of them. I told Adam this the other day. Usually by the end of this thing, I'm glad to have 10 to 12 stories under my belt. You know, I went into day one with 14 assignments.
Wow.
And since then, I've gotten emails with four more. So I brought a couple of people aboard, some young journalists, and they're helping me out. And we're just trying to tell the stories of some guys. You know, yes, I have some stories, like I said, some assignments on the bigger names.
Sure.
But these smaller ones are the fun ones to write.
I like that. Now, how long have you been covering Summer League?
I think this is my seventh year now.
All right. So as we go in the time machine, we look back on these 7 years. You talk about those stories that you've been telling, some of the ones that, hey, maybe more popular ones, but maybe the middle of the road, whatever you want to call it, right? What have been some of the more memorable stories you've gotten to tell over the last 7 years
that
have stuck with you?
John Collins was a fun grab. Just telling his story, he kind of reacted the same way that this kid Perrion did. Of course, John had a little more promise, and of course now he's shining with the Atlanta Hawks. Some of the smaller ones at Spokane have reached out, and in general, I actually did one on Jimmer.
There you go.
For his hometown.
Ed Graney's guy. Couldn't let Jimmer go. He just even brought it up this morning. Jimmer.
One of my favorite moments, and it really didn't have anything to do with, it's not a small town, but I think it was my first year. I was sitting in the Cox Pavilion, and I was on Twitter on my laptop, and there was a story that had broken. I'm trying to think exactly, but the Knicks had a breaking story, but there was a picture that broke the story live from the Summer League. And I looked, and you look at the picture, and it was the banner behind me. So I'm thinking, I was like, wait a minute, that was 3 seconds ago, and I'm turning around, I'm looking, and sure enough, whatever was breaking. So I called AP, and I ended up racing over to the behind where it was quiet, called back to New York. They said, yeah, jump on it, whatever you can. And, whatever you can do, they did an impromptu press conference, and it escapes me the subject and what it had to do with it, who was signing, but I just remember that I got to break this big story for the Knicks. It was my first year at the Summer League, and I was so excited, and by the time I got home and I Googled my name and the Knicks and Associated Press just to see how many hits.
Right, we call it vanity searching.
I got the headline that AP used to put it on the wire, and then I Googled the headline, and it was like 300 and some odd hits across wherever because it was big. And so things like that, just, you know, little things that AP have.
Sure, that stick with you.
Yeah,
absolutely. So. Hey, I've been there. I wrote for Yahoo Sports for a few years. And, yeah, when something gets traction like that, it makes you feel good because, you know, your stories and your work is being read to a larger audience. Let me ask you this before we get you out of here. You're wearing your Dodgers jersey. We talked a little bit about the Home Run Derby. What did you think about Jock Peterson? I mean, he had that battle a couple years ago when he went head-to-head with Todd Frazier. He went to triple overtime last night with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Listen, you hear it all the time. Swing fatigue, right? The Home Run Derby curse. Does that stuff sort of bother you? I know you weren't watching. You were following along with our pal Adam Hill. But, I mean, as you watch those numbers rack up, third overtime, you know it's your left-handed power bat. I mean, I can't say I'd be ecstatic.
I want to know where the juice balls were. That's what I want to know.
Here's the final thing. Like, it was the Home Run Derby. It got me thinking about other contests because I saw this post on Twitter, and it was showing this Korean bunting championship.
I saw somebody tweet that, but I clicked for a minute, but I was in the middle of a game on wherever I was in here, and I didn't get a chance to look into it. But I saw
it looked incredible. It just, like, in terms of, like, accuracy and delicate, like a...
But it was real. It wasn't a parody.
No, it was legit. No, it was legit. It was, they celebrate baseball in Japan. They like to see how accurate are you with bunting and how can you manipulate a baseball. My point is I liked it. Then it got me thinking, I need other skills competitions. I need, like, 2004 Ichiro Suzuki squaring off with Vladimir Guerrero for, like, an accurate long toss or something.
Yeah.
Like, can we please get that? You would want that, yeah?
I was thinking the other day when brought up skills competition, I saw it brought up on Twitter. I think it was an odds, like, you know, odds to win, and it might have been Jeff Sherman had put the odds or something. Anyway, and I was wondering why, and maybe I don't know, maybe there's just not interest or it doesn't, but, you know, home to home.
Yes.
You know, isn't that something that they...
That would be speed, right? That would be a speed test.
Right.
Accuracy test.
But when you get into the league, when you come into the league, that's something that they test you for. It's almost like if you're going to a combine, right? They want to know your speed. Something like, you know, pole to pole, or having to, you know, catching the ball, starting from one point.
Best catch.
Best catch.
Sure.
Something to that effect.
Let's get all that. Yeah, Rob Manfred. You got his number, Willie?
All right. If there's anybody that does, it's probably Adam Hill.
Well, there you go. We'll ask Adam. He's coming up next here on Cofield & Company, but we got plenty more coming on the Mac Attack. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back here in a second live from the Thomas & Mac for NBA Summer League.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, coming up next here, well, not on 920 The Game. You'll have to switch over to ESPN 1100, but we are sharing a space. We are sharing a table. Cofield & Company is going to be coming up from 3 to 6. They got Joey Crawford, former NBA referee, stopping by. And, of course, co-hosting that wonderful show will be Adam Hill. He's joining the show right now for a very specific reason. Adam Hill, yesterday I saw a tweet from Steve Cofield putting out the show podcast after the show, and it was talking about UFC 239, and it was talking about Jorge Masvidal's five-second bludgeoning of Ben Askren. You, I guess, hit the headline machine and said it was not a dominant win.
Yeah.
How do you figure?
Not at all. I see people say, you know, and it particularly comes up when people are like, I want to see rematch of that, or I don't, or whatever. Uh-huh. When, if somebody dominates somebody for four rounds and then finally finishes them, that is a dominant win.
My question
is,
yeah.
That's destruction. That's dominance.
I'm
not calling it a fluke, because that's the wrong word. It's not. It was a very well choreographed, well rehearsed. He had the plan. He executed it perfectly. That was great. But that's not a dominant performance. That's not a one sided. I don't need to see that again because he kept. No, that was a game plan that just worked. And it was, by the way, it was a trick. I mean, that's what it was. He basically played dead.
Yeah,
got somebody to not, attention. Yeah. And then pulled a trick on them. And listen, it's a fantastic win, and it's the kind of win that's going to make you want to see, you know, him fight
but
for a title.
But my question is, what constitutes dominance?
I just said it.
No. How many rounds does a fight have to go?
How much time has to happen? No, there's not a limit on that, but you know when you're watching a fight and you see, like, okay, you're into the second round, you're like, okay, this person has no chance of beating this other person. That person is so much better, executing their plan so much better. That is a one-sided performance. That's domination. That's what it is. If, like, a shot like that, a one-shot knockout, when you don't know anything else about how the fight is playing out, that's not a dominant performance. It's just not. It's a spectacular highlight knockout. And listen, I'm sure what people are saying is, why are you taking it? I'm not taking anything away. That was incredible.
Now, you're a guy who chooses his words carefully. So, and as you should, you're a writer. Things last forever. I get that. You can call, I guess, spectacular, memorable, violent, all those words you could use, but maybe dominant isn't the word you can use.
Yeah, not at all. Like, yeah, I mean,
as much as I wanted to disagree with you.
You think about fights like, I'm thinking like the Derek Lewis, who fought the Russian guy. Was it Krylov? Whatever that fight was.
I think it was Krylov.
Where he got dominated for, you know, Lewis was losing for 14 and a half minutes.
Oh, no, Volkov.
It was Volkov.
It was Volkov,
right.
Lands one shot.
Lands one shot at the end of the fight, and great job. But was he dominant because he had a dominant knockout? No. That's not what a dominant performance is. That was and this is nothing taken away from what Masvidal did. Incredible.
Yeah.
But when people are like, oh, he crushed him, he's so much better than him, like, you don't know that.
All right.
You have
so,
no idea.
All right, so final notes on UFC 239, and I'm glad I got you here. First of all, Thiago Santos going out there. We find out today torn meniscus, torn MCL, ACL, PCL, ECL, DCL, FCL. Like, no, seriously. There were some in there that were legit. He tore, like, four different things. He ripped apart his entire leg. Yeah. How concerning is this for his future going forward? I mean, he risked it all. And, hey, Adam, he still won a scorecard against John Jones on one leg.
He won my scorecard.
Yeah.
I think you never know. But, I mean, knee injuries aren't what they used to be.
That's
knee injuries
point,
are
yeah.
fine. Like, Achilles tears, those are debilitating, devastating. You're basically done.
Yeah.
Knee injuries can be healed. They can be fixed. Now, I don't think we have a whole lot of, you know, scientific evidence on tearing everything.
Like, no, it's which tough is to what say. Happened to Thiago
Santos. Who has come back from that? I don't know. I don't know what the recovery process is, or the diagnosis is.
Also, the damage he did by consistently planting on that leg and throwing that leg. It's one thing to tear and then sit, but now you're bone on bone, presumably. I'm not a doctor, but bone on bone, you're rubbing.
I like our intense breakdown of what, like, I think maybe he tore the ACL early and then keeping planting on it the rest of the way, tore everything up. I don't know what happened.
I mean, serious damage.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, it says a lot about him and what he was able to do despite that, but it also says, you know, a lot about we don't know what his future is going
to
hold.
Dana White saying that he doesn't need to see a rematch because he didn't think the fight was that close. That is absolutely Dana White doing his best not to position Thiago Santos to ever get in a position to take that belt from Jon Jones again, yes?
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they do not want him as champion. A non-English-speaking, relatively charmless, charismaless.
Oh, wrong. That's wrong. The non-English speaking is correct.
Right, but therefore that charm doesn't translate.
But it could eventually. By the way, his English is getting better.
Okay,
I sat down with him and I actually talked English for a while with him.
Good.